Welcome to Strangers from KCRW's Independent Producer Project and StoryCentral.org. My name is Leah Tao, and as I've mentioned before on this podcast, I live alone with my two-year-old son. So last year, I signed up for online dating.
I had wanted to call you in tip-top health.
That's Terry. He's one of the guys I met online, and he had some health issues.
And instead, I had to call you up and say, I'm really sick here, and I'm wondering if you might be able to help me by donating some of your child's stool so that I could do a transplant. And it was really kind of awkward. I think it was probably awkward for both of us.
You probably wonder why Terry wanted my son's poop. But before we get into that, let me go back and tell you how we got to that point. So shortly after I signed up for online dating, I came across this guy with cute pictures and a well-written profile, and we corresponded a bit back and forth. And then he said, I'm about to go to the UK for 3 weeks, so I can't meet right away. And I said, okay, no problem. And then he wrote to me about a week later from England and said, I suppose I should tell you the real reason why I'm here. I've come to England to have 50 hookworms put inside my body. It turned out that Terry suffered from severe allergies and autoimmune issues, and he'd gone to England to seek a treatment which is to intentionally insert hookworms into your bloodstream. It's illegal in the US, but it has a growing number of champions among people with Terry's ailments. It's essentially based on an idea called the hygiene hypothesis, which holds that our hygiene is too good and that we're not exposed to enough germs. And so that's why we've seen this dramatic increase in allergies and autoimmune issues in recent years. And by that same logic, some people think that if you insert some healthy bacteria or some microscopic worms into your system, this can fix the problems. Now, I have to confess that my interest in dating Terry waned a bit at this point. But I was instantly fascinated with the story. I didn't come right out and say, look, I'm no longer interested in dating. But when Terry got back, it sort of solved itself because he got some infection, which was unrelated to the worms. And he told me that he didn't feel well enough to be dating. So I said, no problem. We're on the same page. But how about we meet to do your story for the radio? And he said, no, I'm not interested in that. I don't want to meet you in the context of being sick. I'd rather call you up some fine day and be healthy and ask you out on a date. 5 months later, I was walking up the hill from the beach on a Sunday afternoon. I was pushing my bike with my son on the back, and I got a call from a number I didn't recognize. And the guy said, hi, this is Terry. And I had no idea who it was. Remember, Terry and I had never met face to face, and now we'd been out of touch for months. And he said, well, you know, we met online a while back. And suddenly I was like, oh, yeah, that guy. And he said, well, I'm calling because I haven't been well. You know, the worms didn't take. And now I'm trying to do a new type of therapy called fecal transplants. And some people think that the best stool donor is a young child. And I know you have a son. So I wondered if you would donate his stool. I mean, holy crap. What do you say to that? It was the strangest phone call I had ever received, and he talked a little while longer about what he had in mind, and I couldn't deal, and so I lied and said I was getting a call on the other line and that I would have to call him back. My first instinct was never to call him back. You know, I didn't know much about fecal transplants except what he just told me on the phone, which was that it involved putting someone else's stool inside your own gut. And that was all I needed to know to be severely grossed out. But I didn't know how to say no. It's not like I had any other use for my son's poop. You know, I couldn't claim that I needed it for something. So I'd have to say, that is disgusting, which I didn't want to say. So I thought, better not call at all. But later that night, I was like, you know what? I need to learn more about this thing. And so I Googled it, and I discovered that mainstream media, from ABC News to the New York Times, have done stories about miracle fecal transplants. And so then I wondered, was it selfish of me to say no? I mean, what if this could really help him? And then I thought, this whole thing could make an interesting story. I mean, here's this stranger, a man I have never met, who is going to be my date, and now he wants my son's stool. Come up with a crazier stranger story than that. Terry wanted fecal transplants for the same basic reason he'd wanted the hookworms. He was hoping that the healthy bacteria in the stool would establish a culture of healthy flora which could cure the allergies and digestive issues that plagued him. But I also learned on Google that most of the success stories around fecal transplants related to a particular condition called Clostridium difficile, which Terry did not have, and that there were less clear results when it came to other ailments. And I learned that in most cases, people had these transplants done surgically in the hospital, which is probably why they're called transplants. What Terry had in mind was something much more homemade, where he would rush over to my place, pick up the goods while they were fresh, rush home, and insert it himself, and do so daily. Now, a report from ABC News did say that there was nothing preventing patients from doing this at home, except, as they said, for the gross-out factor. Yeah, no shit. I just didn't feel ready to sign on for it, and I decided that I had to find out if Terry was a medically valid candidate or a crackpot with a poop fetish, and then I would make up my mind. So I called Terry back, and I said, look, I may be willing to do this. I don't know, but I'll explore it with you further if you will do the story with me and if we can record the process. And he said, okay. So that became the beginning of the story you're going to hear today, which has come to be known among my friends over the last year as the poop story. Now, for the scatologically disinclined among you, and I don't know if there's anyone among you who's scatologically inclined, but perhaps there are a few, but for those of you who are not crazy about poop talk, I want you to know that this story is not really about poop, and it quickly turns away from that topic. It's about two people who've never met, two strangers, who are introduced to the internet in the hopes of escaping their loneliness, but then enter into a strange dance where he wants my son's stool and I want his story. And we end up exploring the very heart of what loneliness is. Are we lonely because we're sick, or are we sick because we're lonely? It's the strangest story I've ever done, but it has a surprisingly happy ending. That's me arriving at Terry's house to meet him for the first time in October 2011.
Sorry, I totally spaced out on when you were coming.
Oh, so yeah?
I wasn't nice that to prepared, meet you. But nice to meet you, too. So you made it over the drawbridge.
Yes, you heard that right. Terry lived in a house that was a mini castle with a mini moat and drawbridge in the middle of a totally ordinary residential neighborhood. You walked into a round entry hall with a stone mosaic in the floor and a fountain in the middle surrounded by ornate wooden pillars. The house was built by a carver from the Hearst Castle, and every room had intricate woodwork and floor-to-ceiling wainscoting. Terry was terribly thin and pale with red splotches on his skin, and he didn't much resemble the healthier, handsome man I'd seen in the online profile. Both his parents were dead. His mother had died when he was 17 of lymphoma, and his dad had died suddenly in a car crash when Terry was about 30. He'd inherited just enough money that he could get by without working, and it became clear that he mainly left the house to go to the emergency room or to doctor's appointments or to shop for necessities. He told me he could hardly eat any foods anymore without having an allergic reaction. But he had high hopes for fecal transplants, and he had found a donor, an adult friend who was willing to share his stool, and they had started the process earlier that week. So I came over to hear how that was going.
I'm having kind of a tough day, but...
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, let's be frank about this. I didn't get any sample from my donor at all yesterday because I was in the ER when he normally would have provided it. And then by the time I got home, he thought that he could go, but he sort of lost the urge. And so that was it. You know, it's funny when feces becomes some precious commodity, but that's exactly what it is for me. Today, I was talking to him briefly, and I just said, do you realize just how good this is making me feel? Because I can breathe through my nose, and my skin is clearing up, and I feel less anxious and less depressed, and he was just sort of agog.
Terry was born 3 months prematurely in 1966, and that was very premature at that time.
They had me in an isolette, and I've actually got a photograph of this, where it was a clear plastic box with tubes going in, with needles stuck into my heels. It never really occurred to these people that this kid might need some breastfeeding. And, you know, there's another thing that they do now with premature babies that's called kangarooing, where they have a little harness that the mother wears so that the baby can be right against her belly and the baby can hear her heartbeat. So from an early age, I was probably crying nonstop and I didn't have anybody hugging me. You know, in the mid-60s, they were so uptight about bacteria then. I mean, that's when antibiotics started to become the wonder drug. They figured bacteria was, that was the problem. And now we're coming full circle and realizing that it's actually the solution.
Okay, so I had to ask how this fecal transplant process actually worked.
I can show you if you want. I mean, it's nothing really exciting, but I bought a blender specifically for this purpose that cost about $15. And then there's a funnel.
Okay, people, I'll spare you the details. And for the squeamish among you, the gross part is now over. When I left Terry's house that day, he was full of hope for the future. But a few days later, his stool donor dropped out, and he again expressed interest in my son's poop. I dodged a question because I wasn't ready to go there, and the next time I came to see him, he was on to another solution.
I had been doing some reading about kefir, which is a drink that's like halfway between yogurt and buttermilk, but it's got so much more bacteria than yogurt in it. There's something like 40 or 50 strains of bacteria, plus a couple of different yeasts in this stuff. Actually, I should probably finish this. You sure you don't want some?
Yes, thank you.
Now, it's not that I don't believe in the wonders of kefir. It's that Terry had a way of always getting the anus involved in ways that weren't exactly appetite-inducing.
I did a kefir retention enema last night and woke up this morning just feeling so much better. My nose opened up and I started to be able to smell things, which for me is revolutionary.
It was nice to see Terry feeling good, but he also told me that there had been many treatments that followed a pattern of initial success and then failure. And some of his friends had started to run out of patience.
There's a guy that I've known since 1997 who just got extremely frustrated with me a couple of weeks ago. And he had gotten it into his mind that it was all in my head. And he was saying, look, if you're afraid of dying, why die in your house? Why don't you just go down to Main Street? I mean, what's the difference? If you're going to die, you might as well die in the middle of Main Street. And his attitude was, if you can get out of your house, you'll heal up. And he said, I'm going over to that store near your house. I'm going to pick up a steak for me and my wife. And I want you to walk with me from your house to the store. And I explained to him, look, I'm feeling so awful right now. Can we please do this some other time? And he hung up on me. That's how furious he was. I mean, I think in some ways my friend is right that I need to die on Main Street, but I need to be well enough to do that.
And what your friend was saying was you have to engage with life first and then you'll get better. Right. What would you say to that?
I wish he could be in my body because he would realize it is all in my head. What's going on in my gut is affecting what's going on in my brain. And when my gut starts to feel healthier, suddenly my brain feels great. They're figuring out that people with schizophrenia have damaged flora in their guts. I mean, when you fix the flora in the gut, then all of a sudden everything else gets better. All these emotional issues get solved.
So when was the last time you had somebody over here?
You mean in a romantic way?
Or just...
Just as friends? Boy, you know, the very fact that I have to think about it is not a good sign. You know, the irony is that I came here thinking, what a place to have parties. And I've done that. You know, I was well enough in the time that I've been here that I've had a lot of gatherings where people came over. And there's been a lot of laughter in this house. And I want to kind of get back into that mode.
I did notice that you had most of the shutters closed. Do you keep the light out most of the time, or is it for the allergies?
I'm not really sure what the story is with that. It's kind of a dark house. I mean, even when you open the shutters, it's got brown wainscoting everywhere you look. So, you know, it doesn't tend to be a very light and airy place. And, you know, I've actually had friends of mine say, you know what, your house is really nice, but you should move because it's too dark. It's too depressing. This has been such a difficult year for me from an emotional standpoint. I had a dog that I'd had for 13 years, and she died of cancer. And my ex-girlfriend, and we were together for 14 years, we never really broke up in some ways, because after I split up with her in 2002, we remained friends, and we saw each other several times a week. And it was a few months after my dog had died that she told me that she had gotten propositioned really aggressively by some fellow, and she was in a new relationship. So I think it's not lost on me that that last year that's been so difficult from a social standpoint was also one of the times when I felt my own health slipping the most. And it's up to us when a relationship ends to replace whatever void we feel from that loss with something entirely new.
So what are you filling it with?
Well, I'm not filling it, and there is a void, and that void has health consequences. It's not possible to fill that void with somebody else's poop. But what I would like to do is just get well enough that I can move on in life.
This seemed to be the catch-22 that Terry was perpetually stuck in. He had to get just well enough to do the things that would then make him better. And the way to get just well enough was to try some new alternative treatment aimed at curing the physical imbalances in his body. In addition to the hookworms and the fecal transplants, he told me that he'd also done a dose of 1,500 whipworm, which is a different kind of worm, and it seemed like every month it was a new thing. I felt empathy for his suffering and for the ways in which he was stuck, but I could understand why some of his friends had become exasperated with him.
And when I called him again...
That's the same friend from before.
I called him to tell him good news. You know, I've been to the endocrinologist. They're doing blood tests. I wanted to explain to him there's something seriously wrong with me. Like, it's not just in my head. And he said, okay, but what does everything you talk about have to do with your health? So I can't do anything right at this point. I'm just... Ugh. Ugh. God. I know there's a way out of there. But it's just funny how quickly you can fall in a hole and get stuck. And it seems so hard to get out of it. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. It kind of makes me question my own sanity. Like, what am I projecting out there that would make so many people just go away? I don't know.
What do you think?
I don't know. I really don't know. And, I mean, anyone who's sane has always questioned, you know, what the nature of insanity is. But obviously people who are crazy don't realize what it is that they're projecting to others, or else they would change it, right? So I've often thought, is there something fundamentally wrong with the way I'm projecting? And I feel like what's interesting is that the narrative of this story is leading more and more in that direction. And when you talk about the stranger, that's who the stranger is. It's like, who is this person that these people around me are seeing that they don't want to connect with? And so I think that maybe what's missing for me the most is just a job that takes me outside of the house and involves me with more people.
Have you applied for any?
No, I haven't. Once again, my health is kind of getting in the way of that. I mean, it's a thing where obviously if I could do that, it would probably help me heal faster. But I need to heal a little bit more just to get to that point. But on the bright side, any little thing that works is huge. Like brewing up some kefir on the stove and healing myself with it. And I really do think it'll work. And pretty soon I'll have more hookworms in me, or at least I hope so.
That's right. When we did this interview, Terry had sent away for 50 hookworms, which were being delivered via FedEx from England. And throughout our meetings, Terry seemed to oscillate between a profound understanding of the emotional aspects of all this, and then a renewed insistence that what he needed was some additional form of worm or bacterial therapy.
I'm sold on bacteriotherapy. It's obvious that putting healthy bacteria in my gut makes me better, and so I'm just going to keep doing it. Does that make sense?
It does, but it surprised me a little bit the last time when you said that you had stopped going to therapy because you talk about isolating, and I think about that little premature baby in an incubator all by himself.
Right, yeah. I just need human contact more than anything. I mean, I find that any time I go out and spend time with people, it's healing. I can just feel it. And not necessarily when I'm in the moment, but it's afterwards that I just realize, wow, I just crave that. And, oh God, it's just making me feel physically sick to talk about this. I just feel like my body's collapsing inside when I talk about something like this. And no amount of therapy changes that.
How do you know that no therapist can help you?
Well, you know, part of it too is that there's so much stress in being poor or underfunded. And I'm so close to just not having enough money to continue my current life in the house that I live in. And, you know, I think about the trauma of moving, and I don't need any more trauma. You know, I don't want any more.
You don't think it could also be a liberation, like a new start, a new leaf?
You know, it's funny, I was driving home and I just thought, what if you moved somewhere different and it was better? And what if it felt like a chapter break?
There was nothing I wanted more for Terry than a chapter break, but I didn't think another infusion of worms or poop was going to do it. And I decided once and for all that I would not let my son be a stool donor. And at the same time, I was starting to doubt that there was a story here for me to tell. Perhaps neither one of us would get what we'd come for, because the story wasn't progressing towards any kind of resolution. So I decided to leave it alone, and Terry and I stopped meeting for interviews. That was almost exactly a year ago, and we've only been in sporadic touch over the course of that year. Then a few weeks ago, I emailed him to check in, and I received the happy news that he was much, much better. So last Saturday, I went back to the castle to find out what had changed.
Good to see you.
Good to see you. Been a long time. Wow, look at that. The pool table is gone.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, I have a housemate. So my office is now in the pool room. And it's been good.
It smells good in here. Yeah. What are you cooking?
Lamb and rice and a bunch of veggies.
Can you eat more things these days?
I can. I feel great, but what do you see? It's been a year.
You look totally different. You look so different. I can't even, your skin is clear and your eyes are clear and you look taller somehow. I don't know if that's possible.
Taller.
Yeah? Yeah. I think I was all stooped over.
And you've put on some weight, I think, since I saw you last.
Yeah, I'm 3 pounds lighter than my best weight. And I also have tons of energy. Like, I went for a walk today, and I just felt like going and going and going.
Well, you seem transformed. What changed?
This is how it all happened. It started with me reading a study where researchers had figured out that there was a possible link between colitis and yeast. And then I had a really huge breakthrough, which was discovering that the absolutely zero-carb diet that I was on puts you into what's called ketosis. But I feel like this is really getting kind of granular. I want to come up with a one-liner, which is that all it took was this tiny adjustment in my diet, just adding enough carbs that I wasn't in ketosis.
When did you start working again?
I started working again probably around April. I was running out of money, and I desperately had to work somewhere, and I finally found a job.
How much has that contributed to you being better, do you think?
Oh, I'm sure that that's been good medicine. And the healthier I am, the better people respond to me when I am out in the world.
if I have to look at all the things that have happened, and if I had to pick one thing, I would say that the best thing that happened to you was running out of money, forcing you out of isolation. That would probably be my conclusion. Mm-hmm. I don't think you would have gone out and taken a job unless you absolutely had to, because you had to drag yourself there very ill.
Well, yeah.
And I don't think you would have taken a housemaid unless you absolutely had to. I mean, also just lifting the stress of money, which I know was a huge factor already. But also the other things that it forced you to do that I think very few people in your position would have done unless they absolutely had to.
So basically, I guess I'm dying on Main Street, and it feels really good.
Or maybe you're living on Main Street.
Maybe you never
you never considered that an option.
I meant it ironically. But yeah, I mean, if this is dying, it feels pretty good.
You know that life is the most common cause of death.
Yeah, it is. And you can't die on Main Street unless you were alive beforehand, right? No, I agree with you, but I hesitate to say that the prescription for anyone who's ill is to just seek out Main Street. I think that what you're talking about is the inciting moment. So, you're right, I got to a point where I ran out of money, and that's what got me out of the house. But I wish that there were a way to view things on a parallel track where I didn't run out of money, and where I simply started to treat a yeast infection and eat more carbs so that I wasn't in ketosis. That's probably not as sexy a story, but it could be that simple. I don't know.
You know, I don't either.
We could talk all day about what it is that I did that was the key ingredient, but the fact is that I got better.
Maybe that's all that matters, you know?
Yeah. I really feel solid in a way that I haven't in a long, long time.
And hooray for that.
And hooray for that.
Virtue is a thing that defies easy measure.
That was Terry, although that's not his real name. And I want to thank him for all the hours he gave me and for his openness in the process and his willingness to explore the issues from all sides. His story is an unusual one, and I'd really like to hear what you think. Go to kcow.com/strangers to join the debate. It was a difficult story to do. I had many, many hours of tape, and even more moments of doubt, trying to assess whether this was too weird or too gross or too sad, and whether there was even a story here. In the end, I decided to do it because I liked the way it highlighted so many aspects of this theme of strangers. The way he and I met, of course, but also the way he was becoming estranged from people around him, and at times even from himself, it seemed, and the way he found his way back into the healing company of strangers and friends. And while he and I might ultimately have had different takes on the ability of worms and bacteria infusions to help him, I do think that there's a lot of truth in the hygiene hypothesis, and I like it as a metaphor for the fact that we need foreign organisms. We need creatures that are strange and perhaps even scary to us in order to have a healthy balance in our lives. I have to give enormous thanks to my friend Suzanne Costas, who helped me transcribe all the interviews with Terry and who wrote funny and poignant comments in the margins that helped me make sense of it all. I had other sounding boards on this story, thanks to Jen Koontz, Bianca Gaver, and Jessica Lee Williamson. And above all, thanks to Kristen Carty, who listens to virtually every episode in draft form and tells me what works for her and what doesn't. And here's a brand new thing. You can now buy your own Strangers t-shirt or shopping bag at storycentral.org. Do it soon, and you can have it in time for Christmas. Give it to a friend or a stranger or to yourself, and the proceeds go to support the podcast. If you don't need another shirt or bag, how about making a tax-deductible donation before the end of the year? That's right. As of this week, we are set up to accept tax-deductible donations. Look for the store and the donate page at storycentral.org. And of course, as always, I want to thank Mike Dodge Weisskopf, my musical supervisor, who has an incredible project of his own.
He travels the world and creates audio travelogues from remote places. And he has a Kickstarter campaign right now for his upcoming trip to Socotra. Look for the link at mike.me. That's MYKE.ME. Finally, thanks to Mario Diaz for the mix and to the funders of KCRW's Independent Producer Project for their support. The Annenberg Foundation, the Goldhirsch Foundation, and the Roth Family Foundation. I'm Leah Tao. Until next time, good luck this holiday season, and don't be a stranger.
You think you're better. I know we're just the same.